Sir David Thorne, Reel 16. You're saying the Air Force was aware of the fact that it had difficulties about this question of leadership.
On the one hand, they're aware of it. On the other hand, they are sensitive about it. And yet, I think they do understand that there is a different leadership requirement as between the Navy, where you're cooped up in a ship, you can't jump ship, the boss is in the ship, they're in very close contact with all his people, from the lowest ranks up to senior officers, and therefore need to find some form of sensible separation. The captain's cabin is sacrosanct, and he's given the chance to have a little space. So that's one environment. The other environment, which is unlike the Air Force, is the armies, where you actually have to take people into battle, and certainly as far as the infantry are concerned, once they're out of their APC or out of their truck, and they're 30 men under a platoon commander, and they're on the loose, and their fears and their hopes and their disciplines, their fears can play havoc with what they do. And so the whole nature of army discipline is based upon a balance between understanding that you never let down the man to your left or right, or you don't show your face in the village ever again, so to speak, and the reality that not everybody is as brave as everybody else. And so you've got to stay close together, and you've got to help those that are fearful, to the extent that, and driving them is one way, but it is the worst way. And the other way is actually to inspire them with the confidence that they will have the confidence. And so there's an extraordinary mix of human relationships and discipline in the army at the key level, which is the platoon and the section, which the Air Force simply don't have to create. So they don't have to create it, and in a sense it would be both difficult and wasteful for them to spend long hours trying to do this. But there are occasions when they will need to fight to preserve the integrity of their airfield. They will have to drive themselves beyond normal human endurance in order to get aircraft into the air and the people that are flying them continue in a frame of mind that they will fly those aircraft to the death, so to speak. And so there's an extraordinary breed, which is their pilots. And those that fly, who at the same time mustn't be seen as gods by the rest, because otherwise you get a Deminar situation, which again is very dangerous to the morale of a key organization like a Royal Air Force squadron. So I actually think that the Air Force has the most difficult leadership task of all, in the sense that it is it lacks the motivational realities of the army, where every man guards every other man's back, so to speak, ultimately. This is not true in the Air Force. And so they have this danger of being a special breed on one side. They're pretty independent minded, as I mentioned already, and rightly so, as set against the broad field of the technicians and administrators and so on. And it's probably not something that the Air Force openly, at that stage, spoke very freely about, although they were conscious of it. One of the things I had to do as the Army instructor was I had to speak about leadership. And the first time I spoke about it, and I didn't go to any evidence testers, but my own text, and I quoted from Montrose, feel his fate too much, or his deserts are small, he puts it not under the touch, don't worry at all. I spoke about the qualities that made for a strong leader, and I spoke for about 7 or 8 minutes, 10 minutes. But the key thing is that I had this text. But when I spoke, standing in the middle of the stage, without a mate at all. All the other people have been speaking tech
behind the podium.
And that was the main message. That basically, leadership is the art of communicating with your will and capturing the minds of those that need to come with you into whatever task it is. And it is making people want to come with you rather than come reluctantly. Now, I don't think that the Air Force needs to teach people that so much as the Army does. The Army has a driving need to help people to understand how to inspire conviction and determination in others. And the easy task is the task of the leader. The difficult task is the task of the led. The leader must do everything in his power to inspire and help the people who are being led to feel that it is their conviction that they're caring for, not just his or hers. That in the Air Force, you don't need to some extent. The raw extent, you need it in a good army.
You might have needed it in the Air Force more when you had large bombers with crews of 7 or 8 men.
Yeah. That's very strong team issue.
Yes.
But in the end, those, and to an extent those bombers protected each other. But
not breaking formation was very important.
Not to the raw extent you need it in an army. And that's why the Air Force often produce excellent strategists. Very clear-headed people, very analytical and logical.
Well, there's even the most basic flying task requires a certain grasp of mathematics for navigational purposes. So that encourages you to think in terms of mathematical logic.
Absolutely. In a sense, a great thing about logic is it's a reassuring thing. Anything. One of the great problems of a lot of the military side is that, in terms of the army, is that there are some things that are controllable by ourselves. Like our energy supply, like where our ammunition is, like what our food is, and water. Like how we construct ourselves, how we are equipped. But there comes a time when everything is on the loose. Once you cross the start line, and if you miss, you know every single move the enemy is going to make, you cannot apply logic to it.
Well, you can never know what the enemy is going to do.
Because he again is driven by fear, by hope, by forcing
misperception.
So yeah, you know where we started from is right. The Air Force have a different, no less noble, no less exacting. But it is less demanding in terms of what we call leadership and more limited towards management.
I mean, you said you had to speak about leadership because you were the Army representative. Did you have a specialist function as a member of the DS, or were you covering the whole syllabus?
Covered the whole syllabus as a normal Royal Air Force DS. So I had to read myself in from the basics. Which again was a very useful exercise.
Do you remember any of the basic texts that you had to read on air warfare? Did any of them stick with you?
Not really. Because the great art there was to get them to talk about it. And they would know why. And you could have a very good conversation, and they would feel they were helping me and helping each other. Because half the art there is just to make sure that people can talk about it and have a feel for it. And if you've got an IFDS who's an absolute wizard, and everybody knows that, they tend to everyone, everybody will shut up. Whereas if they've got an Army DS, who, an infantryman, and who's showing an interest, then there's a lovely sort of dialogue can develop, an entertaining dialogue, in which they can show their knowledge and can express themselves clearly and can make some very good points among each other. And I think that's the proper environment for a good discussion.
Not that they're educating each other.
Educating each other and the guy who's, in a sense, in charge of the discussion. Mm. Very healthy.
How were they assessed? Was it continuous assessment on the basis of...
Yeah, every paper was assessed.
Yes.
And then there was a very thorough assessment at the end of each term of each individual against a whole series of qualities and questions. Out of which, then eventually, they got a grading out of 10 the term, and then an overall grading at the end of the course, which really basically meant that 5 was average, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6, 4, 4 was below average, 5 was actually average, 6 was all part of the average bracket.
Yes.
And then 7 and 8 were above average. And 9 was absolutely outstanding, and very few people got that.
And no one ever got 10.
Not that I recall. And the people who got 7, like Mike Graydon, ended up with chiefly outstanding.
Could you, how long did it take you, when you first met a syndicate of 10 or so officers, did you find that you were able to reach a reasonable judgment of their capabilities within a relatively short time, or did it take you a long experience to get? Yes.
Probably within 3 weeks, first impressions. But then the validation of that, the rest of the time.
Yes.
Very capital, because, again, people, different levels of shyness, different levels of expertise, different view of oneself, and they really need to actually sort of find a chance to relax with one. And it's quite a formal sort of, you know, everyone needs anything looked at. So it's very difficult for people to relax upon it.
Did they come from all branches of the Air Force equally or proportionately?
Absolutely, and from other countries as well. I mean, some of the most entertaining people were from outside this country. I mean, the Finnish officer was superb. I mean, he had the capacity to drink, and he never seen him in my life. He had a beautiful, beautiful wife he brought in, who was a sparkling personality. He drank like a fish, he wrote good sense, he... I don't know what sleep he got in a night, but usually not coming in more than 2 or 3 hours, and not 11 nights. He was up there with the best of them. An extraordinarily strong personality. And there were numbers like that. People from Canada and Australia and the UN, from the old Commonwealth, from the new Commonwealth, also from Finland and Germany and France and so on.
What about army officers? Did you have any of them on the course?
Four of those, one army air corps,
yes,
a gunner, and a couple of infantrymen. They were sort of middle piece or just above in the army, most of them. They weren't the flyers. Anyway, one of them was Andy Evans, very good. So, cross section, really. And they did themselves well, and they were a nice, close-knit bunch. They got no one particularly well. The Air Force have a tendency to grade down. Had to watch out for that.
What, to be pessimistic in yes.
I thought so. Feel pessimistic about me. And the army sort of got out. Lack of confidence about army officers and our reporting system.
Was their reporting system different? I mean, significantly different?
They don't see their reports.
Ah. They don't have open reporting then?
No. So they're quite different. They don't have open reporting then. But Air Marshal Beatham, who was the commandant, put straight in the small problem there. And he and I stayed friends right to the end when we finished the airport. Got to go there with him. Colonel was cool, underneath it. Very, very intelligent. But when it came to just getting on together, the Soviet army actually was a very nice warm personality. That comes back to that he was archetypal high quality Air Force, not great extrovert at all, very cool and ordered.
You were saying earlier that it was difficult to get them to relax in the sense of taking part in sports and games and other external activities. Why were they so driven? What was it that made them so much more intense than...
Career conscious.
More so than the people who would have been
more
at Campbell?
More so than quite a lot of army officers, thank God. Thank God the army officers are not so career conscious. Maybe now they weren't then. It didn't mean the army officers didn't take it seriously, did it very seriously. But the really good RAF officers were out there playing the hockey and the cricket, and I knew them all because I played the games myself. I ran that squash, ran that cricket, and played in that hockey. So I used to get to know all of them very well. And there were a number of directing staff, like Robin Lees, who was a very good friend. He was a great RAF squash and rackets player. And he and I got to know a lot of them much better than the other years because we played sport with them and we did things with them.
Did they have a pantomime?
Yeah, they did. I can't remember if I should remember or not.
But it was always said that at Camberley, what really mattered was not what you did in the syndicate room, it's what you did in the pantomime.
Exactly. The other thing I did that rather like at Cranmore was the spirit of them, in the army, if you're told to be at a place for a certain time, whatever rank, you're there. And if you're not there, then you're liable to lose your name and the transport.
Restriction of privileges.
This is right. You're just in there and then boom. Well, in this instance, I'd been there about 2 months. And I was put in charge of it to the place next to Aldershot where the RAF have got a research.
Farnborough. The medical school. Yes, that would be part of DERA now, Defence Evaluation Research Agency, yes.
And we then went along to the farm itself. And I was in charge of the buses. And I said, look, these are the buses, these are the seats. And basically, we keep on the move and keep going. We got to the first place. I said, right, we're leaving here at such a time. And what I said, the end time. When the time came, about half of them had made it back. We left, they all left behind, and from then on, in the 2 years I was there, nobody for single games ever failed to be on time. But they're just not, you want to get independent, expect to be waited, does he really mean it? Here we go. Right. So they got a real shot, rather like the captain of the Cranmore cricket team, who really didn't turn up when the bus was leaving after breakfast to go down to Dartmouth. I left him. And he hadn't got the captain was absent from the team.
Well, army punctuality means being there 5 minutes ahead of time, doesn't it, normally?
On the ball, on time. And actually, I waited for 5 minutes this guy didn't turn up.
Well, that's 2 minutes short of Lord Chesterfield's limit.
Is it?
You may wait for a man for 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Interesting, isn't it? But that, again, is symptomatic of some of the approach to things.
That's rather peculiar because when you're dealing with the Air Force, takeoff time means takeoff time. And they stick to that rigidly, don't they?
Absolutely.
There they are extraordinarily disciplined because on many military exercise, you might be there waiting for an advanced contact and it starts sometime later. But in the Air Force, if they say they're going to take off at a certain time, that's when the aircraft leaves the ground.
So that was just another sort of, But on the whole, I knew then I was going to be commanding a battalion.
Oh, did you get early warning of that, that you were going to be?
Yeah, pretty good early warning. And so I knew about 9 months before.
Were you able to do any sort of preliminary work towards taking over? Because this was something new, wasn't it?
The only work I did was try and get the right couple of commanders. I had a very good engineer then, a very good set of commanders.
Did that mean negotiation with the military secretary? Was that a sort of...
just saying to Alex to look, yes. I'd like to see these people there. All that sort of conversation. But the key battle was to attain Mike Walker, because he wanted to leave the army.
He wanted to leave the army?
Yeah.
Why?
He was thinking of leaving the army. Well, I think, you know, like these very able people, he loved the regiment, but he was thinking of lots of other things to do in life, as I did. Mm. You know? And I think at that stage he was unsettled by the fact that he is a great love of his life, and he was married to Nara, was not saying yes, she was saying maybe. And a number of things like that. He'd just been to the online, and he was thinking, you know, perhaps, you know, if I leave the army, she'll say yes. I don't know. But anyhow, I wrote to him at least twice to persuade him to stay, and then he did stay.
What argument, do you remember what arguments you used to persuade him that...
Priceless to the regiment. And as ops officer, and as in this future adjutant, I'm going to make him an adjutant. He had an enormously important role to play. And that was all. And we all admired him and we liked him to stay.
And that did the trick?
I don't know. But that, plus other things, helped. And so that was the one thing that really I concentrated on, was trying to persuade him to stay. Which perhaps is a good time for